ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कंठ 1 चैप्टर 10 टेक्स्ट फॉर ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद, हु इज हियर विद अस नाउ बाय हिज इंस्ट्रक्शंस व्हिच वी विल रीड। कामं ववर्ष पर्जन्य सर्व काम दुखामहि शिशिच्छु स्म व्रजान् गाव During the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira, the clouds showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. How about that? Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. The cows were so happy that just milk would be flowing, making the ground wet. Unimaginable nowadays. Purport. Yeah, as I said, this is... Srila Prabhupada used to quote this verse fairly often. And this purport is... you could say one of Prabhupada's classics. Although all of Prabhupada's purports are absolutely Golokera Prema Dhan Hari Nama Sankirtan, they're all directly from the spiritual world. But this is actually an analysis of the material world at the present time, how it is and how it could be. Okay, let's read it. The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows. Prabhupada stresses that. Italicized. Land and cows. The necessities of human society are food, grains, fruits, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, etc. One requires all these items to fulfill the material needs of the body. Certainly, one does not require flesh and fish or iron tools and machinery. During the regime of Maharaj Yudhishthira, it's interesting how Srila Prabhupada uses words sometimes. Regime, that's usually used in English to talk about the rule of some dictator or some bad guy. No, good guys, you don't talk about them as regime. But Prabhupada used that term because he was a dictator, Yudhishthira. But not like a Stalin or a Hitler, but he was a good dictator. So during the regime of Maharaj Yudhishthira, all over the world, there were regulated rainfalls. Rainfalls are not in the control of the human being. It's interesting how Srila Prabhupada, he writes things that you think they might not be needed to write. The first sentence of this purport, the basic principle of the second sentence, the necessities of human society are food, grains, fruits, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, etc. You may think, why does Prabhupada write that? Everyone knows that, but actually they don't. Because people think that you need flesh and fish and iron tools and machinery, but no, you don't need all these things. And again, Srila Prabhupada writes again, rainfalls are not in the control of the human being. Oh, really? Oh. People don't know. They don't think about these things. It's Srila Prabhupada, he's as if talking to children. So, Srila Prabhupada continues, the heavenly king Indradev is the controller of rains, and he is the servant of the Lord. When the Lord is obeyed by the king and the people under the king's administration, there are regulated rains from the horizon, and these rains are the causes of all varieties of production on the land. Not only do regulated rains help ample production of grains and fruits, but when they combine with astronomical influences, there is ample production of valuable stones and pearls. Grains and vegetables can sumptuously feed a man and animals, and a fatty cow delivers enough milk to supply a man sumptuously with vigor and vitality. If there is enough milk, enough grain, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels, then why do people need economic development in the shape of tools and machines? It's a rhetorical question. In other words, these things are not needed. People don't think about these things. If you have food and cloth and all the necessities for maintaining the body, then why do you need tools and machines and big, crowded, polluted cities? That's which is implied here. Can tools and machines supply vigor and vitality to men and animals? Can machinery produce grain, fruit, and milk, or jewels and silk? Are jewels and silk, along with varieties of foodstuffs prepared with ghee, grain, milk, and fruits, not sufficient for man's pure, luxurious, and healthy life? Jewels? Anyone here wearing jewels? Any of the ladies? Some jewels? You have gold earrings, huh? Some have. In Nandagram, I said all our boys, they can get some earrings. That's all. Otherwise, people don't wear nowadays. Otherwise, previously, at least in India, men and women both would wear plenty of earrings and gold bangles and everything. Nowadays, no. No such thing. Then, Prabhupada continues, what is the need of an artificial luxurious life of cinemas, cars, radio, flesh, and hotels? Has this civilization produced anything more than the doggish mentality of quarreling individually and nationally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality, and fraternity by sending thousands of men into a hellish factory and the war fields at the whims of a particular man? It is said here that the cows used to moisten the pasturing land with milk because their milk bags were fatty and the animals were joyful. Do they not require, therefore, proper protection for a joyful life by being fed with a sufficient quantity of grass in the field? Why should men kill cows for their selfish purposes? Why should man not be satisfied with grains, fruits, and milk, which combined together can produce hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes? That's another important part of the Krishna conscious movement, to give prasadam prepared with all kinds of varieties. Prabhupada introduced that in the West. And Prabhupada said, if people get food like this, you rasgullas and rubbery and all these things, then they can give up all their meat, and they don't have any idea what nice things can be prepared from milk. So it's actually, in one sense, a great disservice that in the Western countries they've given up producing all these things. They just give everyone pizza and pasta and all this, which they can get anywhere. So that's an important thing, to give hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes. Prabhupada continues, why are there slaughterhouses all over the world to kill innocent animals? The question there, why? It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason. Why? It's just to satisfy the tongues of demoniac people. That's the reason. Prabhupada continues, Maharaj Parikshit, grandson of Maharaj Yudhishthira, while touring his vast kingdom, saw a black man attempting to kill a cow. The king at once arrested the butcher and chastised him sufficiently. Should not a king or executive head protect the lives of the poor animals who are unable to defend themselves? Is this humanity? Are not the animals of a country citizens also? Then why are they allowed to be butchered in organized slaughterhouses? Are these the signs of equality, fraternity, and non-violence? It seems there are more questions in this purport than in all the rest of Prabhupada's books put together. It's one question after another. And then Srila Prabhupada goes on, therefore, in contrast with the modern, advanced, civilized form of government, Srila Prabhupada's being sarcastic here, in contrast with the modern, advanced, civilized form of government, an autocracy like Maharaj Yudhishthira's is by far superior to a so-called democracy in which animals are killed and a man less than an animal is allowed to cast votes for another less than animal man. Classic. We are all creatures of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord Himself is the seed-giving Father. Watch the verse. Watch the line. Only one line. Okay, very good. Aham bija pradapita. The Lord is the seed-giving Father, and material nature is the mother of all living beings in all shapes. What's that? Material nature is the mother of all living beings in all shapes. Sarva yonishu konteya. Murtavanti sambhavanti yaha tasam brahma mahadhyane aham bija pritam. It's in the same verse. Thus, mother material nature has enough foodstuff for both for animals and for men, by the grace of the Father Almighty, Sri Krishna. The human being is the elder brother of all other living beings. He is endowed with intelligence more powerful than that of the animals, for realizing the course of nature and the indications of the Almighty Father. Human civilization should depend on the production of material nature without artificially attempting economic development to turn the world into a chaos of artificial greed and love of power only for the purpose of artificial luxuries and sense gratification. This is but the life of dogs and hogs. So Srila Prabhupada summarizes the whole project of Western civilization. 3,000 years, glorious development, hogs and dogs. That's it all. It's all summed up. So instead of studying history, I had to study history at school for 4 or 5 years. Here we have, anyway. This is but the life of dogs and hogs. That's all. That's all. Prabhupada sums it all up. So continuing with the theme that democracy has failed, especially in India. By the way, if anyone thinks we're promoting socialism or communism, I'll just read one brief quote from Srila Prabhupada. Materialistic democracy and socialism or whatever, these become dog-eat-dog societies. So we know it's not that we're promoting socialism. It's actually enlightened dictatorship, as the example of Yudhishthira and Parikshit, and before that, Lord Sri Ram, the famous kings. So this is the thesis, that democracy has not served India well, that after, how many years, 70 years, is it 72 years now? 72 years of approximately 72 years of democracy. There are still millions in poverty. Corruption is rife. Criminals can flourish. Prabhupada in this purport is talking about the land. It gives so much production. But one major social problem in India at the present time, which in the ongoing elections no politicians have even spoken about it, is mass farmer suicides. No one speaks about it. I suspect they don't speak about it because they think that it's not a big enough constituency of farmers committing suicide that they can get votes. They only address issues where they can get votes. That's all. Otherwise, they don't care. If there's a group of people who are suffering in so many ways, but they're not big enough that it's worth addressing their issues, they're not a big enough group that their votes will make that much difference, and politicians don't care. That's all. That's a mistake of democracy, because just looking, where can I get the votes? At the beginning of this so-called independent India, they introduced this quota system, reservations, with the idea of leveling out caste inequity. But it's going on. It's going on. The reservation system only preserves the division of various castes. It doesn't It doesn't level it out. And what happens, it becomes undemocratic. If you're born in a Brahmin family, by the law of the land, you have less opportunity than someone born in an, I don't know, OBC or something like that. You're actually discriminated against by the law. That's the situation. This reservation system, it promotes birth over qualification, which was the whole problem that they're trying to get rid of with the caste system, right? So the caste system, the problem with it is that it promotes birth over qualification. But then if you have a reservation system, it does the same thing, but in another way. It promotes birth over qualification. It's an advantage to be in a scheduled tribe or something like this. Educationally, it's an advantage. Or for getting government jobs, it's an advantage. Before, the lower strata of society were discriminated against. Now the higher strata are discriminated against. That's all. It should be scrapped, but it can't be because of democracy. Because of democracy, because the votes. You can't say what needs to be said because you want to get votes. And I was saying last time the film, the actors and actresses, they become political leaders. What are they? They're professional clowns, actually. They jump around on a stage and they entertain people, a very, very low level, cheap level, and then and that's what democracy means. That you, just like the actors and actresses, they can make good politicians because there's not that much different. A politician is putting on an act that he cares for the people and wants to do something for them. And the main thing is to make people feel good. That's all. You don't actually have to do. You don't do anything substantial for them. Just like an actor in a movie, they don't do anything substantial for anyone, but they get lots of money. So they're used to that. That they don't do anything substantial, but they're big public figures and they get lots of money. So okay, now they'll retire as an actor and they'll become a politician, which you don't do anything substantial for anyone, but you get a lot of public attention, you get a lot of money. So it's a natural segue from being an actor to being a politician. So different ideologies. Yes, we're talking about ideology. Yudhishthira Maharaj didn't have any ideology. It was a fixed way to govern the kingdom. Not that you have to dream up different ideologies. The idea, what's the justification for capitalism, in which some people are very rich and they exploit the others, so it said. Well, the idea is that some people are rich, but anyway, there's the money. They're expert in producing money and employing others. So in this way, they organize employment. Just like you may go into a place like Goa when no one was employed. There's no employment. Actually, they weren't employed. They were living on their own land. But then you make mines and factories, and then you're giving so much employment to people. They didn't have employment. They didn't need employment. But you see, remember, now I'm employing so many people. So they make that facility. And some people become very rich, but there's the trickle-down effect. It means that some people are rich, but anyway, they spend their money, and when they spend their money, then the money gets diffused among the broader society. That's the idea. If they build a big house, then they have to have so many masons and carpenters to build it, and they employ so many people. Some people are good at economic development. So that's the idea, that the trickle-down effect, that everyone gets to share in the money. And then the ideal is, they say, what's good for business is good for everyone. That's the idea. Because if there's business and economic development, then same thing. If you want to build a factory, then you have to have so many people to build it, and then you have to employ so many people in it, and then and you get the economy moving, development. You need so many people to advertise the products and to transport them and to market them, and in this way to get the economy moving. What's the point? That's what Prabhupada points out in this purport. You don't need all these things that they're producing. People can live simply. But they have no higher goal of life. So what's better? Socialism, instead of having a few people exploit everyone, it's a great idea. Everyone works according to their capacity and takes according to their need. That's the motto, right? Where's that from? Any idea? Who coined that phrase? Everyone works according to their capacity and takes according to their need. That's the idea in socialism. I don't know where it came from. Maybe from Marx or one of the original. Well, Marx and Engels are the scriptwriters of the Communist Manifesto. So that's the idea, that everyone works, and then some people can work harder than others, but everyone gets benefited. Not that anyone benefits anyone more than anyone else. It's kind of utilitarianism, which was a philosophy and which influenced economics. Jeremy Bentham, the idea of utilitarianism, that society should be organized in such a way that it works for the greatest benefit of the greatest number of people. And that, so everyone, you don't just think of one or two individuals, but you think of everyone, how the whole society can be benefited. Of course, there can be problems with that. Just like, for instance, in Germany, one person thought that, well, the majority of people here are Germans, and we would be a lot benefited if these Jews, we did something with them. So that was the idea. We're going to benefit the Germans by killing the Jews. Might seem to make sense if you're a German. And it wasn't that they just started killing them without any supposed reason. There's a whole book to support the whole theory. It's a crazy man's book, but there was some idea behind it, some so-called philosophy, and it seemed to make sense. Okay, utilitarianism, greater good of the people. Okay, there's a man. He's 25 years old, not married, doesn't have any friends, doesn't have any family. He just has some simple job and not a very important person in society. So he goes to visit he's just walking down the street and someone grabs him and carts him off to the hospital. What's going on? So it's a big importance. There are three important scientists about to die. One needs a kidney, one needs a liver. One needs a massive blood transfusion. So this guy, they check him, and it's all the same blood group. They kill him and give his blood, liver, and kidneys to these three important scientists. That makes sense, doesn't it? Because the three important scientists can do a lot of, they're doing a lot of good for human society. Better to keep them alive, and this insignificant person, well, it's for the greater good, right? It's the greater good of the whole society. I'm just giving this example. I didn't make it up. Of course, there are problems with this idea of utilitarianism, of doing the greatest good for the greatest number of people. What's the moral justification for killing some person because he's insignificant for the benefit of the broader society? There are moral problems with that. Socialism, and practically speaking, the socialist countries, the socialism, communism, it didn't bring in the utopia that was promised. Srila Prabhupada went to Russia. He said it's like a terrorist state. People are living in fear. And actually that was the fact throughout the communist world, because, I know at least one god brother who lived under the communist regime until the age of 13, when he fled from Czechoslovakia. What happened was the Russians, Czechoslovakia decided they didn't want to be under the USSR's boot anymore, so they just started making different rules, and they wanted to make the society more liberal, and the Soviet army invaded Czechoslovakia in 1968, just to let them know that they weren't very impressed by their desire not to be communist anymore. So what happened was the Czechoslovakian border guards, they left the borders open, so anyone who wanted to get out could. So that was Manida. At the age of 13, his father fled. The family went to Germany. So he lived in the communist regime for the first 13 years of his life. And then he went to Germany. So he said that in the communist time, it was like everyone was spying on everyone else. The father can't trust his son, nor the son his father, because if you say anything, even at home, if you make a little joke about the leaders or you don't like the system, you can't try, it can be reported, and then you might just vanish. No trace, no one to ask questions. What happened to my brother, son? There's no one to ask, there's no record, they're just gone. Vanished people. There are a lot of them in South America also, Argentina, just Paraguay, people just, Chile, just vanished, no record. What happened to them? Don't know. They went out to work one day, they never came back. Who is there to ask? Police? They don't know. They do know, but they're not going to tell. So terrorist states actually. So there are problems with democracy, but it's not that we're advocating communism. But in democracy, actually the rulers, they don't have any real power to do any good. Even if they know what should be done, they can't do it because they have to pander to the whims of the voters. And the voters, they don't like programs that might be good for them in the long term. I mean, even in terms of modern economics, different countries, they may have to, austerity measures may be required. Otherwise the whole economy will collapse. But the voters don't like that. So, but then if you vote for someone who doesn't impose the austerity measures, then you suffer more anyway. It's like Shreya and Preya. If you tell the voters, okay, vote, you vote me in and we'll hike the taxes and what else they do? They hike the taxes and they give less social welfare benefits and we're going to have to do this for the long term. No one will vote for them. And then the economy collapses, as actually happened in Greece. It's a complex story, but I'm just making it simple. Not that I understand it myself, and I don't know if anyone understands it very well. Because even just like this economic collapse, what was that, 2008, and then they try to interpret it according to different economic theories, which means they don't really understand what's going on. Is that right? There are different theories of how it happened according to... It shouldn't have happened according to Keynesian theory, which Margaret Thatcher was a great fan of, and so on and so on and so on. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada put it very simply. It's instead of being ruled by noble kshatriyas who know what is the real goal of life and are not afraid to implement that and are under guidance of brahmanas, instead it's a rule by people who are vaishyas and shudras with a strong admixture of demoniac propensities. Shudra, like Regan, well, he was a film star, even not a very good film star. And then he became he had the power to to blow up the world. Too much power for someone with too little qualification. So democracy in India and everywhere else has failed to give equity. Equity means equality, fairness, justice, good character. We don't even hear anyone talking about good character. Does anyone even talk about it? In the schools, do they talk about it? I don't think so. Good character? What does it mean, good character? Good character. Ah, yeah, I know what it means. In the world today, good character means that you think it's good if people are lesbians, gays, bisexuals. That's good. That's good character. Right? You don't discriminate against them. And you think that everyone's good. And if people, you should allow all kinds of people into your country, and then if they blow you up, well, or they do terrorist acts, well, that's good. You shouldn't say anything against it. Or if they rape your children, yeah, we shouldn't say anything against them. That's good. Hare Krishna. Definitely this modern society has not brought happiness. Definitely not transparency. We don't know. We actually don't know what's going on. You'll find there's so many conspiracy theories. There's so many conspiracy theories, and I have a suspicion, this is my conspiracy theory, that so many conspiracy theories are put out just to confuse people. And then some of them may be true, some of them not, but you just don't know what's going on. There's so many things. What's actually going on in the world? In the name of democracy, many countries, they don't even have basic facilities for the citizens. Just like here in India, even a poor man, if he has some injury, he has to go to the hospital, he has to pay huge amounts of money. Or you can go to the government hospital and then just lie on the floor. There's no place, no doctor, no proper treatment. If you want to get treated properly, then you have to take a loan for lakhs and lakhs of rupees. That's all. There's no discrimination. Just like you'll see on the internet every day, they have, please save my son, he needs 13 lakhs. Why don't you take him to the hospital? And the doctor says, so the hospital administrators say, this will cost 13 lakhs. So if you pay, we'll save your son. If you don't pay, then he'll die. Why is that? Government should provide. Actually, in England, they had a very good national health service. It was a good idea, actually. Because after the Second World War, the idea was that, well, we just spend so much money on killing people, we could spend money on looking after our own people. And they instituted the National Health Service, which has been taken to pieces by successive governments. So it doesn't work properly at all now. It's a shambles. Democracy, yes. Prabhupada quoted in this purport, equality, fraternity and non-violence. That's almost paraphrasing the idea of the French Revolution, which you'll see written still in Paris, somewhere in the center of the city. I think it's at the Bastille, the site of the Bastille, which was where they killed so many people. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. So it's almost the same as English. Liberty. Equality means equality and fraternity. The French Revolution was founded on those principles, and then what followed was the Reign of Terror, in which they just killed so many people very efficiently with the guillotine. They invented Monsieur Guillotine, invented a very efficient device where you just put their head and chops off their head. Very quick, clean, very efficient. Was put to use after the French Revolution. So the idea is that democracy, we're fostering all these qualities all over the world, but practically speaking, the countries which have become powerful, they interfere with elections all over the world. They manipulate them, or they install their some supporter of their the democracies, the so-called democracies. They work for the benefit of the rich people of their country, not for the benefit of all the citizens, and they'll work against the interests of other countries. So these atheists, they blame religion for causing wars. But in today's world, most of the horrific things are done in the name of democracy, actually, or by so-called democratic governments. Go and ask the Iraqis if life was better under Saddam Hussein. It might not have been heaven on earth, but at least you weren't getting bombed and total chaotic situation in the country. Now, I'm going to read a little bit more from the beautiful Bhagavatam, glorious purport of Srila Prabhupada. Let's go. Where are we going here? Another of those classic statements. This is from Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 43. In which Shamika Rishi is speaking to Sringi, his son, who has cursed Parikshit Maharaj to die. And Shamika Rishi is educating his son about the glories of the pious kings. So he says, Shamika Rishi says, "My dear boy, the Lord who carries the wheel of a chariot, Ratanga Pani, is represented by the monarchical regime." We have in Gita also, what does Krishna say about that? Naranam cha naradhipam. Among men, I am the leader, means the king, among mankind. So the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is represented by the monarchical regime, and when this regime is abolished, democracy means no king, right? Or there may be constitutional monarchy, which means the monarch has no power, actually. They're just a figurehead. Most famously, somehow or other, the British monarchy is the most famous. Although there are other monarchies also in Monaco, which is a tiny little place, city-state. Where else? In Belgium, there's a king. Did you know that? In Belgium, in Holland, there's a king. In Denmark, in Sweden, in Thailand. There was in Nepal until recently. So there are, and of course we have sultans and emirs who are like kings in various Muslim countries. So, when this regime is abolished, the whole world becomes filled with thieves who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects like scattered lambs. Purport. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the monarchical regime represents the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. The king is said to be the representative of the Absolute Personality of Godhead because he is trained. Hear that word, trained. Srila Prabhupada used this word trained several times in this purport. The king is trained to acquire the qualities of God to protect the living beings. So the king is said to be the representative of the Supreme Lord because he acts like the Supreme Lord in the matter of protecting, what does Srila Prabhupada say, the living beings. He doesn't say the human beings, he says the living beings. The battle of Kurukshetra was planned by the Lord to establish the real representative of the Lord, Maharaj Yudhishthira, an ideal king thoroughly trained by culture and devotional service with the martial spirit makes a perfect king. There you go. There's a nutshell. What makes a perfect king? An ideal king thoroughly trained by culture and devotional service with the martial spirit makes a perfect king. There you go. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is speaking through Srila Prabhupada. What a perfect definition in just a few words. Such a personal monarchy is far better than the so-called democracy of no training and responsibility. Again, the word training. The thieves and rogues of modern democracy. The election is going on. What is it for the thieves and rogues of modern democracy? They seek election by misrepresentation of votes, and the successful rogues and thieves are like wolves who devour the mass of population as if they were scattered lambs. In the Bhagavatam, we have also in the predictions for the age of Kali, Prajaste Bhakshishyanti Mlecha Rajanya Rupina, that in Kali Yuga, the mlechas, the lowest kind of people, they take the roles of kings, of rulers, and they devour the citizens. Actually, while researching this article, I did a little research. Research nowadays means you go on the internet. It used to mean you go to libraries and meet people and this and that, but nowadays you can do a lot on the internet. I know, I used to do research. Still, that is there. So, there was one comment that I wrote it down here, that politicians are the lowest among human beings. Even the prostitutes are higher. They make an honest living. It's an honest job in the sense that, okay, here's the services, and this is the service I provide, and it costs this much, and so it's honest living. It's not. Yeah, I think nowadays in many countries, if you say something against prostitutes, that would be illegal also, because everything bad is good and everything good is bad. That's the way it is in the modern world. But anyway, that's the that was one comment. So again, Prabhupada used the word trained. One trained monarch is far better than hundreds of useless ministerial rogues. Again, how many seats are there in the Lok Sabha? 630, something like that. Huh? 543. So one Prabhupada says, one trained monarch is far better than hundreds of useless ministerial rogues. And then apart from that, there's a whole big bureaucracy and Indian civil service? IAS, Indian Administrative Service. There's this writer's building in Calcutta. We used to have to go time to time there to try and get some permission or something. It's the writer's building. That's where you have to get signatures from all the government officers. So it's a seat of corruption. You can't even, first of all, you can't even meet the person without paying a bribe. And then the file has to go to one person for a signature, then another, then another, then another. Every step you have to bribe. Or you can take a dalal and he just does it all for you. You pay so much and then he moves the file like that. But they make it as difficult as possible. Fosters difficult. Hundreds of useless material rogues, and it is hinted herein that by the abolition of a monarchical regime like that of Maharaj Parikshit, the mass of people become open to many attacks of the age of Kali. They are never happy in a much-advertised democracy. They're never happy in a much-advertised, they make such a big thing, democracy, but they're never happy. People are not happy. The result of such a kingless administration is described in the following verses. Just in the next two verses, I'll read the translations. Due to the termination of the monarchical regime and the plundering of the people's wealth by rogues and thieves, there will be great social disruptions. People will be killed and injured, and animals and women will be stolen. And then At that time, the people in general will fall systematically from the path of a progressive civilization. Arya Dharma, Prabhupada translates this as progressive civilization, in respect to the qualitative engagements of the castes and the orders of society and the Vedic injunctions. In this verse, the words Arya Dharma and Varnashram Achar, these words are used, and these are spoiled when there's no king. Thus, the people will be more attracted to economic development for sense gratification. It's right there in the Sanskrit. Tataha artha kama abhiman. Artha kama. Economic development for sense gratification. And as a result, there will be unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. So, one important point that Srila Prabhupada uses in that purport that we just read, again and again uses the word trained monarchy. Trained. So, obviously, in any field that requires some expertise, you want trained people. Even to be a cinema actor is like a professional clown, but they get training also. Even to be a cinema actor, you require training. So a trained and enlightened and powerful ruler is better than so many incompetent people. What do we have at the present situation? The present situation, actually, the rulers should be looked up to with respect, and the people, they should love their king, just like he's like a father to the citizens. He's strong, but he protects them and sees that their needs are cared for. But nowadays, a politician, it's not a dignified. It's a fear, a politician. Oh, you have to be careful. Oh, very dangerous. Very dangerous person. So training, Prabhupada recommends training. Governing, to govern a whole country, it requires knowledge of what to do. If someone's been a film star and then they become the governor of California, that was also that Rambo guy, what's his name? Arnold something. Arnold Schwarzenegger, is it? Yeah. So he became the governor of California. What for? Because he had a big strong body, and then he can be the governor of California. It requires knowledge and vision and actual power also to do the job. It's a specialized task. It requires special abilities and training. Abilities should be there also, just like you people should have some inherent swabhav. It's some people you can train, just like they have leadership training courses. But a real leader, they'll come up. Now, I may appear to be contradicting myself, but if someone has leadership qualities, they'll take a leadership role. And if they don't, then in any amount of leadership training courses, you'll never make a leader out of them. Just like they have all these Master of Business Administration. And you get an MBA, and then what happens? You're employed by someone who actually knows how to make money. But if in governing the state, it's such an important task that the people, they should have leadership qualities, but they should be trained also. Most important, they should know what is the ideal, to be like Rama and Yudhishthira, who cared for their people. They actually cared. It was important to them what the people thought about them, because they wanted to do good for the people. And they knew that the highest good is to train people on the path of dharma. Now, actually, if you want to get rich in India today, it's a very lucrative profession, being a politician, right? Why should you work hard as a doctor or an engineer or a chai wala selling chai? You might become the prime minister later, but most of them don't. So it's a very lucrative profession. People send their children to college and university to be trained as engineers and doctors, and the idea is that later on they'll earn plenty of money, right? So why aren't there schools for teaching how to be a politician? There are courses you can take in political science, but the people who study those courses, they never become politicians, just like the people who study MBA, they never become businessmen. They might come from a business family themselves. But previously, just like the big businessman, he might not be even very educated, but he would employ educated people. He knew how to get the job done. So why aren't there educational institutions for training politicians? Well, the way politics is at the present time, see, who sends their kids to the schools? It's the people from middle class families and this and that. They all send their children to be doctors and engineers. You don't find people from big Marwari or whatever families. They don't send their big business families. They don't send their children to be engineers and doctors. They already have the business background. So if you want to come up and be rich, why be an engineer? Do an engineering course, you may be high likelihood you won't even get a job. Why not go into politics? It's not considered respectable. You'd think there would be courses. I mean, there are thousands and thousands, so many politicians at various levels from here in India, from the sarpanch level, from the village level, right up to the president of the country. There must be thousands of people. There's no training. There's no educational institution which trains them. They play a major role in society. What they do has a profound effect on the whole of society, but there's no training for them. What would the training be? Well, there'd be public speaking and debating, but just like if you study in business school, actually you don't really learn anything. That what it's really like till you get out there, where the real world, it's in business world, is rat eats rat. So in politics, if you had a school for politics, to be effective, you'd have to teach people how to cheat and lie and appear respectable while you're making all kinds of plans to stab people in the back. That's what they'd have to teach. How to mess people up, how to be heartless and shameless as you put on a smile while you sign the paper, which means that so many people will have to die. Sign the paper. Now we're going to war. It's for a good cause. Well, we're selling billions of dollars worth of weapons to another country. It's for a good cause. For a good cause. Or even it's not for a good cause. Recently, the Canadian Prime Minister, there was brought up to, why are you selling these weapons to Saudi Arabia? And they're going to be used to kill citizens in Yemen. Well, it's too big a deal. For the sake of Canada, we can't pass it up. Billions of dollars worth of business. So money's more important than human life. You can't, how to mess people up for your own benefit. This is what you'd have to teach. Making the laws, how to get around the laws and flout the laws and make the laws in such a way that you can mess other people up. Just like this economic crisis of 2008, what happened, the politicians in America they relaxed all the government controls on the banking system and said, let them regulate themselves. Then so many of them, they left politics and went into the banking system and made the system so that they could exploit it for their own wealth, and then they went into the system and made themselves wealthy and messed up the whole country and the whole world for their own so-called benefit. So actually they can't teach these things because then no one would vote for them. You have to be smart enough and mean enough and cruel enough to pick it up yourself as you go along. It's demoniac. Worst people get into politics. It's not at all respectable. No, no, no respect. But then they become respectable, because somehow or other, if you get money in the modern world, you're considered respectable. Even, it doesn't matter. There's blood on, just like the British, they've fooled the whole world into thinking the British are highly civilized people. What, they became very powerful, and how is that? By killing and exploiting and destroying civilizations and making propaganda that we are very civilized. Only by propaganda. So don't believe them. So we are in the situation in the world where increasingly people don't believe that the politicians have their best interests. But what's the alternative? We're supposed to give the alternative, which is Varnashram society. So when we're talking about Varnashram projects, it's not meant just to be a few people sitting on a farm. It's meant for the whole world, actually. So act locally, think globally. That was a motto put out by Mukunda Maharaj when he was heading up this ISKCON communications. Act locally, think globally. We have a lot of work to do. It is easier to point out the problems than to make the solution, but the solution begins here with Krishi Goraksha Vanidya, especially Krishi Goraksha, agriculture and cow protection. It starts here. These farms of projects of Srila Prabhupada, they're not meant just for a few people to come and join, it's meant for the whole world. So, Hare Krishna, any question, comment, Molotov cocktails, cherry bombs? Yeah.
More of a comment.
Yeah.
So, here it is mentioned that the cows are joyous.
The cows are joyous. Yeah.
So, in the evening when our cows return to their gashala, you can see them jumping.
The cows jump. They jump as they come. They're happy.
They are so happy.
Just like our little, where is she?
Taruni,
she skips around, like a little child. She skips happily here and there. So the cows, they feel very happy.
These descriptions are not, some fabrication or something.
Very good point. It's not just something that someone's making up some fairy tale, but you can see it. If the cows feel protected and feel happy and they feel loved, then they express their happiness by skipping along as like little children. They skip along as they go from place to place.
And what is it they want to see? They can come here every evening. It practically happens every evening.
Go ahead, make a video of it. Dancing cows.
I've seen first time in my life. I've never experienced this.
One experience I had, this was not so long ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, at Bhaktivedanta Manor, maybe about 15 years ago. My father came, he used to come to visit me at Bhaktivedanta Manor. He's too old to go out of the house now. But he came to visit. So there's Europe's first cow protection program. That was a pamphlet put out by Mukunda Maharaj about the cow protection at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So we had a corral there. That's wooden fencing. And inside there are some cows and this and that. So there was this young Hereford heifer. Hereford is a breed in quite somewhat common in England. So there was one Hereford heifer. And I just put my hands through the corral and started, what do you call that, stroking him. My father said, "Oh, so tame." He was so surprised. Because generally in England, there may be cows grazing in the field. If you walk in the field, they'll all look terrified. They're terrified of human. Shortly before I joined, I was staying in a Catholic monastery in the Republic of Ireland, and one of the ways they supported themselves was they had a dairy. So the cows, they're just completely in fear. You can't go near them, they'll run away. That's the monks looking after them. They treat them as just economic objects. The way they treat them is they just live their whole life in fear. And if the male calf is born, then they'll just take away. In India, no, also no. They'll just take away for slaughter. I know I was staying at one farm just outside Salem, and whenever a male calf is born, within a few days, gone. And then the cow is lamenting, crying. Gone means they're sent for slaughter. That's the real problem in human society. If the cows are not protected, then there can be no auspiciousness. Politicians have this plan and that plan. Now the plan in India is to introduce, coming from Subramanian Swami, big BJP leader, wants to introduce mass cow slaughter in India in the name that cows are not cows. If they're not Indian breed, they're not cows, they're pigs. So kill them. That's his idea. They're making legislation like that. Hellish. Then the Hindus will think, oh, it's good to eat, we can eat. He's not really a cow. Very, very inauspicious. And whichever government comes in, they're probably going to bring this. Congress, they don't care about anything good. And BJP also, they're the ones who want to bring in. They're the biggest slaughterhouse in Asia was opened in Hyderabad by Vajpayee. When he was prime minister. So don't get all excited about who's going to win the election. We need, in our ISKCON, we need to train Brahmins, right? That's supposed to be the first thing. And then they have to train the Kshatriyas. They have to guidance to the politicians. Their whole idea of governing the society, whether it's this party or that party, it's all wrong. Beginning to end, top to bottom, inside out, upside down, any way you look at it, it's all wrong. Anything else?
In one of the lectures you said that Srila Prabhupada mentioned that millions will join our farms.
Millions will join our farms, yeah.
I tried to search the reference in Vedanta basically.
Oh, yeah, I can give it to you. It's in the manuscript of my Mood and Mission book.
That's only from Rameshwar, probably.
Yeah, I think Rameshwar said that. Yeah, maybe, yeah. Ramesh had many things that Prabhupada said to him, which are revolutionary, but some of them are recorded, so I don't think he's just making them all up. Okay, Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Parivadatu jano yathatata vānanu mukharana vayang vichara yamaha Hare Rasamadira madati mata Bhuvi vilu tama na tama nirvishama Tantaini dhaya chernakam padayoni patya kritva chakaku shatameta dahambravimi He sadhava sakalam eva vihaya durad Chaitanya chandra cherne guru tanu ragam Vancha kalpataru bhyas charki bhas indu vyava chapatitana bhavana bhyo vashna Hare Krishna.